Coming up on the Naughtiest Naughty.
Who thought we'd go from Planet Funk to Limp Bizkit?
Sorry.
I love this podcast, it's great. In light of recent events stateside, Scott's series winner is Miley Cyrus, Party in the USA.
And what do you know? Liam's series winner is also Miley Cyrus, Party in the USA.
Oh, Scott, thank fuck for that. Thank fuck for that.
Yeah, you know whenever babies walk around and they stick their bums out and they look like Donald Duck, yeah? My wife has been calling our little boy Donald, and I'm like, is it because he looks like Donald Duck? And it's not, it's whenever he has a whinge, she refers to him as Donald, referring to him as being Donald Trump because Donald Trump has behaved like a baby. Weird. What
yeah.
a week.
Well, those days are hopefully behind us. He hasn't conceded yet at time of recording, no.
But okay, in all seriousness, so Liam's is actually blue, Paul Reyes.
And despite liking Faceless We Come One, and this is your quote, way, 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 way more, Scott's is Jennifer Lopez, Love Don't Cost a Thing. This is the Naughtiest Naughty. Welcome to the podcast. We are listening to every pop song that was in the top 10 of the charts in the noughties, 2000 to 2009. We're just going to try and find the best one, basically.
We are.
We're just going to try and find the best one. It's going to take us years to do it, but we're loving it. We're really enjoying it. You're loving it too, which is really fun. Each week we have about a handful of tracks. This week it's only six, but that's just how it's worked out. Mm-hmm. We'll try and choose the best one of the week, and it'll go up against, as you've just heard, our series winner, in a winner stays on battle.
Absolutely.
And loads of lovely new people getting in touch this week. Loads of lovely new people sending emails and voice notes and stuff. We'll hear those very shortly. Can I just flag up before we start that this week we did an interview with somebody. We recorded an interview. And it's going to come out in 10 days from now. We'll tell you who it is during this podcast because weirdly, a discussion point that we spoke about with the guest came up and it shared with a song we're talking about today.
Yes.
So all will be revealed in due course. Scott, help us delve into the mailbag, please.
Right, okay. We've got to say a big shout to Carly Ness and Ellis who say, "Dear Liam and Scott, firstly, I just wanted to say a big thank you to both of you for getting me through the many lockdowns of 2020. I found your podcast through my celeb lockdown crush, your BFF Mark from A1. Do you guys have a new celebrity crush since lockdown? As a postie in the burbs of Liverpool, catching up on previous episodes, we got through some tough days together and just as one of the nation's key workers." Oh, that's dead sweet. Congratulations, Carly.
Thank you very much.
"I have loved discovering some of the dance music of 2000, which I may have overlooked as a moody 13-year-old back in kind of like 2001. And actually, an interesting fact was I was a massive Westlife fan back in the day, and I'm trying to figure out why. Literally, literally no personality whatsoever. Brian McFadden's Cold Dead Eyes continue to haunt me to this day."
I'm glad someone agrees.
I do. Is that strange? Because I'm finding now that we're in a blue territory personally, I'm starting to see, oh yeah, boy bands are actually pretty cool. But you know, I was there too in the sense that, like, you know, we didn't like boy bands just because it wasn't cool for guys to like boy bands, you know what I mean? But really, on reflection, I don't think there's anything that Westlife could have done that would have really like made me become a Westlife super fan. You know, I could love the tracks, but I was never going to be a proper super fan at that point too. But yeah, no. I was also lucky enough to see Steps before their demise at Christmas 2001 and Blue circa 2003.
Jealous.
Truly a great time for pop music and a despair at what youngsters are listening to all at the moment. It sounds all the same. At least we've had genres in the noughties, even if we are still creeped out with Craig David eyeballing us in 7 days.
Yes.
This week's winner for me was Faithless. My runner-up was Basement Jacks. If this was me 19 years ago, it probably would have been Steps, although I don't remember these tracks that well. Mm. My overall winner is, a credible one, Daft Punk, One More Time. Ooh. It was featured on the film Trolls World Tour, and my three-year-old absolutely loved it and will dance to it if it comes on. And this is my anthem of the noughties. Still a big tune, and we'll definitely throw some shapes to this on the dance floor once the madness of the year ends. Fingers crossed. Peace and love, Carly. P.S. Going to see A1 next September, hopefully.
Hopefully.
So looking forward to reliving some part of my youth. Recommend your podcast to all my friends my age. Keep up the good work.
Oh, thank you very much, Carly. Lovely to hear from you. So much to unpick from that. But she's asked us about our celebrity crush during lockdown. Have you got a new celebrity crush during lockdown?
Do you know what? Things have gone weird on my timeline, and as we're recording this, there's a massive fight for the number one album between Kylie and Little Mix. And Kylie, as it stands today, is 5,000 copies in the lead, and she's been in the lead all week, but now what was very, very close, she seems to be pulling away a little bit. But Kylie now, from this podcast, has come up on my timeline so much, there's a weird Kylie crush going on. Mel C, because of the pages that we followed for World Cups and stuff, is coming on. I'm starting to fancy Mel C more than I ever have done. I think she's like really just charismatic in her later life. Is there anybody else? Probably just Lee Ryan, you know, the source, you know, the same old thing.
Mine, funnily enough, is also a Mark from A1, so there you go.
Oh, is it? You have pretty babies.
Let's hear. we definitely would. He get, you know, all the good genes are on his side. The babies would have neck fat from me. This from Matt from Pick a Disc. He sent us his spreadsheet this week. We've heard from Matt loads across the series. We've now got a spreadsheet, which is really, really exciting. He says, I was a little self-conscious about how long a track ended up being on there, as it beat a few tough choices, but for a good chunk of 2000, I don't think anyone could touch it. There's a few notes that show up when you hover over some of the cells, possibly to justify some of my controversial picks, and there is some notes that I'll reference. All Saints Pure Shores was his winner for 28 weeks.
Ah.
28 weeks, but no longer. Craig David and Spiller came close, but it was DJ Pied Piper just a few weeks ago that knocked it off. He says, finally, I bloody love this song. Best garage track of the whole era. You betcha.
Oh.
And then, in the week where he picked Girl Thing over Kylie, he says, if there's ever been an example of guilty pleasure songs, it's this one. Yes, I picked this over Spinning Around. As modern Kylie tracks go, I never really liked one. Hello, Scott. Clearly targeted at you as the massive Kylie fan. Girl Thing over Kylie. Does that make you want to cry yourself to sleep?
Yeah, you know, I know I've laughed out loud and exhaled at that kind of comment, but, you know, each to their own. I completely get it. You have your connections to things. Otherwise, if we didn't, Liam wouldn't be completely obsessed now with S Club Juniors. The Apple Tribute ones, was it?
Weird.
18s.
18s, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, I do think it's shocking because I think there's so much... I think there's so much depth to Kylie Spinning Around, and there's funk and stuff in it. And production-wise, I think we've got somewhere better elements to it. I think vocally, we've got a nicer sound that isn't as mass-produced, even though some people have said that Kylie sounds like a chipmunk, which was Simon Cowell, who then tried to sign her and could never get her. But yeah, no, each to their own. Don't fear my judgment. I might laugh at you and stuff like that, but who am I to laugh at you whenever I'm sitting saying I love Faithless and choosing J-Lo? You know what I mean?
Coming up on today's show, we got a mundane conversation from the Stereophonics that sparked them into life, and Limp Bizkit presenting a difficult ultimatum.
We've got a posthumous hit from Tupac plus two trips to the cinema with tracks from Moulin Rouge and Pearl Harbor. But first...
So we're in the middle of June. This is the week commencing the 17th of the month, 2001. And this was the week where Channel 4 announced that they were planning to axe The Big Breakfast. It's on its way out. And I think in 2002 it did finish. I was never really old enough to watch it. I was more of a GMTV person just because... I think the Big Breakfast just didn't seem appropriate for me, even though it was on in the morning.
Yeah.
I just don't think I would have ever really... And it's weird, though, because I did watch things like Have I Got News For You as a child?
Mm-hmm.
Despite not really knowing anything about politics, I guess I just liked the bright colours and stuff. But yeah, The Big Breakfast, I feel like I missed out. All the clips I've seen It just looks hilarious, yeah. And it looks like the kind of thing they should have on now.
Big Breakfast is kind of a walk-in advert for the whole reason why Channel 4 existed. It was for representation, and people that needed a platform that just weren't getting it because, you know, ITV and the BBC were just a little bit too middle class.
Yeah.
But the Big Breakfast, Old Ford Lock, it's as if, you know, it's one of them things where everybody remembers the addresses and stuff of right in at this, you know, oh, dear me. Yeah, it was a great show. I loved it.
There's a really brilliant clip of Ant and Dec on with Zig and Zag, the puppets.
Oh, Jesus.
When they were still on Bike Grove, when they're still like Anthony and Declan, and they're not like, actually, they might even be introduced as Declan and Anthony.
Oh, no.
That's how early it was, is that they weren't even Ant and Dec at that point. Mm-hmm. And they're just sitting there all awkward, and it's like, you know, they've come a long way. It's a really, really brilliant clip because Zig and Zag just absolutely torture them, and it's fantastic.
Wow.
Anyway, in terms of pop music, we've got a new number two because Shaggy, inexplicably, is still number one. Still can't understand that, really. But number two was this from Mystique. The track is called All I Want.
So this is the follow-up to Why that got to number 8, and as you hear in the lyrics, it's the Sonship remix, and it is their joint biggest single with Scandalous.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, for me, Open the Raspberry Seedless, jam, 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 jam. I'd even upgrade it to a curd, you know, like a proper posh curd.
Oh, wow.
Speed Garage, jam, 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 jam. Love it.
That's a whole new level of... I've been thinking about if we ever did merch, about having like intro juice t-shirts. This is a new thing for us. It's now literally like Garage Curd.
Garage Curd would be good. I love this track, and I think we've mentioned it before where my specific memories are my mate Sarah Blair again dancing around. Sarah's the one with the music channels that you all know about.
Yeah,
music channels, living room, dancing, brilliant vocalist, just like a pop star herself. But her dancing around to this just to make me laugh, and I've got a connection to it that I've had to do that thing where scrap my connection, is it a jam? And it's on my paper, it's three jams in capital letters. Jam, jam, jam. Garage Curd, love it.
It is pretty special, and it's the first track, as you say, after Why, which was an interesting one because it came out with a big R&B track.
Mm-hmm.
Then it took on a better life as a garage track. They presumably had a light bulb moment, and now here we are with them doing a proper, you know, fully formed Sonship produced garage track.
Yeah,
it's structurally so sound. I think like the structure of it is fantastic. Lyrically, really rich. You know, it's written by Sabrina with some other songwriters. And I think, I guess Alicia gets a credit for her rap bit as well. It's a UK thing, so that we bring. I want to go, let the journey begin with a mistake. We're in chorus, we sing. We cough them up, ring a ding, ding, ding. In a mix with a bag of tricks. For the vibe, with a fun Sonship. Move to the beat, it's about music. Go through these tracks with a fresh tactic. Sabrina dominates the track. Mm-hmm. Alicia has her niche. Sue Elise kind of pushed out. But Sue Elise does get a bit of acting in the video when she disappears through the mirror.
Yeah.
And I think it's Alicia goes, Sue Elise! It's a brilliant bit of, you know, terrible acting.
It's kind of like the worst 2001 Stranger Things that you could ever really experience, isn't it? Just for that second, and then it gets good. But yeah, we do have a like a cheesy mirror moment that's just like, oh no.
They could really sue Netflix for that. I think they were in there way before. Compare this to 3LW, which we had a few weeks ago.
Who?
Not that we should be pitting, you know, all black girl bands against each other, because that's definitely not what the vibe that we're going for is, because the people would have done that in the day, and I suppose I'm doing it now, but this is so much more memorable. The choreography is shit hot, and they just, all three of them look amazing.
Yeah,
like this is a complete package, really. And Alicia spells the name of the group in her, you know, rap bit at the start. That's 10 points in Scrabble straight away for that cue. You don't get a lot of cues in those spelling name drop things.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a cue.
Yeah, that is pretty,
you know,
good,
I mean?
Too.
That's pretty good, yeah.
I've got down that the vibe of it, yes, yes, yes. The production is great. The blend of singing and rapping is amazing. I just love this BPM. I feel like 2001, right, is a year that I could probably lose a couple of stone to if I just started dancing around the house to some of my favourites, because this would get me shifting. But this is another one where I didn't know the words, and Sarah at the time didn't know the words, but then Sarah got Smash Hits magazine and things like that, so had access to lyrics pre kind of like internet information. But where she goes, gonna get up on the mic, gonna make you wind. IG should go, wabba-dabba-dab, and away you go. So I didn't know what the words were, but we were back to another one of those moments where
I think it's fire it up.
There's a
fire
couple.
Fire it up and away we go.
Yeah, I'm thinking. Yeah, there's that bit as well. I'm thinking of gonna get up on the mic, gonna make you wind.
Yeah.
I wanted it. I love the fact it comes straight in with a chorus as well.
Yes,
when it starts.
Yes.
You know, it is good. But yeah, I do agree that the video. So that we do have the element of, oh, she gets sucked into the mirror. Oh, it's a bit cringe. But was it really smart CGI for 2001? Probably was, actually.
I guess so.
But my thought of, right, so what happens is Sue Elise gets sucked into the mirror, trying on a top while the other two are lying behind her in the bed. And then they just run to the mirror and go through. If I was in the room with somebody and they get sucked into the mirror, I'd be at the fucking door.
Yeah.
There's no way I'd be running near that mirror. I'd be like, what on earth just happened? I'd be gone. Yeah. Like, what would you do? Would you run to the mirror or would you get out of the room?
I'd be out of there like a shot. I couldn't leave that room quick enough.
Yeah, if it was my own child or something, you know, like that whole,
yeah.
If your child falls into a river, what do? You go in with them? Like, I'd probably, if it was a kid, I would run through that mirror and I'd be gone. But if it was a mate or somebody in my, you know, like a colleague, like the official,
if it was
were,
me,
I'd
if it was me, just say it. If it was if me, it was you'd abandon me like I was hot shit. Right, thanks, Scott. Cheers.
But I'd kind of laugh and point for a bit and then go down and put the kettle on.
All right, fair enough.
Jammy Dodger.
That's what I would want. If I died by going through a mirror, I think I'd want you to stand and laugh for at least 5 seconds. I'm okay with that. That's okay. That's fine.
Man, you'd be sorry if that happens.
Yeah.
I think we've started strong with a number two.
Really have.
I think I'd have rather had this at number one than Shaggy.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I feel like they've been cheated here. I feel like, given my thoughts on Shaggy and given my thoughts on this, they have been robbed. And I can't believe Scandalous wasn't a number one. I know we've said that this and Scandalous are both number twos. That makes me physically sick. Mystique have been cheated across their entire career. They should have been number ones. Should have.
See, I'm kind of thinking, right, you know, the logic of this podcast and one of the reasons why we exist, that if you were sitting in a house full of mates and you wanted to decide what was the best pop song of the decade, what you would do is you would Google it, mm-hmm. but what would happen is the biggest number ones of the decade would come back, which means we lose songs like Scandalous, lose songs like this, we lose other songs that were just absolute bangers and things that got to number six that never got to number one. So I'm glad we're going through the process, really.
Yeah.
This is an example of a track that we do this for.
A big motivation for doing this was just to have, you know, the more obscure noughties tracks up my sleeve, mm-hmm. when parties come around and I can go, actually, I can put this on and just look cooler than everybody else. So thanks, Mystique. You've done that. You've helped us there. Okay, this one's a bit of a different one. It comes from somebody who at 2001 was actually no longer with us. This is Tupac and his big number four called Until the End of Time.
This featured the vocals of RL Hugger from the band Next on the chorus. And yeah, this was I think it might have been off one of the five albums since his death that have actually gone platinum in the US. So this is one of the most successful guys pretty much of all time to live on beyond the grave musically.
This was the third of those five posthumous albums, and it came out based on material that was recorded in 95, 96 on Suge Knight's Death Row Records. Now, if you've seen Straight Outta Compton, you'll know that people don't like Suge Knight anymore. He's been in prison. He might still be in prison, I'm not too sure. But there's suggestion here that Suge Knight is bleeding every penny out of Tupac even after he's dead, because he can, because he owns it.
Oh.
And that's certainly the vibe of the reviews that I read. NME said, maybe, just maybe, Tupac Shakur will finally rest in peace when the cupboard is threadbare.
Oh.
There was still two albums after this. And AV Club said similar things. Basically, they said the latest is Until the End of Time, a double disc set with a title explaining just how long label kingpin Suge Knight plans to exploit Tupac Shakur's legacy. Until the End of Time.
Yeah.
Ouch.
I wonder what Tupac would have actually wanted. I suppose that's a massive question that is just debated everywhere, really, with people.
Yeah, that's always the case. I mean, in recent years, I've had a look through some of the posthumous albums that have been released, and I feel like there's been quite a lot in recent years because we've had so many famous hip-hop and rap artists who have died.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this year alone, you've had Mac Miller, Pop Smoke, Juice WRLD all release posthumous albums. Mm-hmm. Last year, Lil Peep, Avicii, XXXTentacion. These albums are becoming so regular because I guess there's just such a vast amount of material that's always being worked on all the time. Some that will never be intended to be released to the outer world because they're just demos or just because they're, you know, workshopping activities or, you know, exercises. And now they're being released as, you know, half finished things, and it's taken somebody else to come in and finish them off.
Yeah.
The artist surely wouldn't want somebody else to come and tamper with their vision. It's purely just a way to, it's just a way to bleed some more money out, isn't it?
Yeah, do you think people now, you know, like, so for example, Avicii, you know, this could have been a clause just in contracts. Is this a thing that any musician now could sign up to? And it's like, any of your sessions, any breakout, any little buzz things we do, we own the rights to, and we will sell them if you are no longer here, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And there must be, it'd be really interesting to look at the ins and outs of, you know, the agreements and the conversations that actually happen. And yeah, I'd be intrigued to see what happens with that really too. But for me, I always remember Tupac as the guy that addressed like real life social issues, and that even though I didn't know loads of the lyrics, I was just really aware that it was about the day in and day out of inner cities, suburbs, pretty much. Yeah. And strange enough, you would never really associate me with Tupac, but I've got like this weird whole long run of experience with Tupac just from like 1998, 1999, predominantly. Would it have been 1999? Mostly 1999. So whenever my mum had died in 1998, I would go down to Dublin and stay with my cousins, and my cousin Declan was like the biggest Tupac fan you've ever experienced in your life. Mm. And he would, as soon as there was an album, straight into the city centre, getting the album, and we'd be blasting Tupac out. And he got it. Obviously, I didn't. I do actually remember when he went and bought a Tupac album. We both went into this music store, and I used my pocket money to buy an album. And it was not long after the Venga Boys Up and Down had come out, and I hadn't heard any more Venga Boys tracks. And I was like, I'm going to get this one. This is a brilliant dance album. And then we're going to Ibiza, and we like to party, and Uncle John from Jamaica and all of that kind of crack was all on one album. And so we're turning off Tupac. I'm like, right, it's my album's turn now. And they're like, have you just gone from Tupac to my Uncle John from Jamaica? Yeah, we had. But yeah, lots of memories in Dublin listening to Tupac, and my mate Declan and all of his kind of crew and Coolock in Dublin just like living it, just like educating themselves on everything to do with this whole movement, really.
In terms of the song, I don't know how much the plan for this original before, you know, Tupac died and before it became a posthumous track. Mm-hmm. For how long was the plan to have the Mr. sample in the track? Mm-hmm. I want to know when that came into the mixture, because there's no suggestion in Tupac's lyrics that link it to Wings necessarily, or,
no,
you know, tempo-wise, that could go over any beat basically, but they did choose Mr.'s 1985 hit Broken Wings, which sounds like this. So take the track was called Broken Wings at one point, but changed for legal reasons. We did M.O.P. Cold as Ice recently, which was Foreigner. We did Phil Collins last week, which was Brandy and Ray J. Now we have Mr. on Tupac. I'm starting to see a theme here of like sort of 80s white, what do you call this, sort of like ballad, it's sort of like power ballad rock.
Yeah.
Where do you stand on it? I don't think I was that fussed.
I think we've got to remember that hip hop obviously stems from sampling, and actually the hip hop movement is the reason why we discuss the word transformational, because it's all built around whether it's transformational. I'm not bothered about the Mr.'s track, to be fair. Mm. I do remember this track and have like an attachment to that track. It was a number 4. I like the church bells in it. I like the bass. Lyrically, it is quite deep, but it's so deep that I don't really feel like I have the right to comment on half of it, you know, just as my little privileged white Northern Irish dude.
Yeah.
But overall, I do find it quite depressing. And when I've gone through it, right, I've gone through all of the lyrics separately, and I've just kind of removed the chorus because I'm looking at the Tupac-ness of it, not the chorus. I do find it really depressing, and actually like what seems like a really big cry for help from Tupac. You know, it's actually really, it is quite miserable, and I want to love it because of my attachment to my cousin Declan, who I love, and my times in Dublin, but it doesn't do very much for me. And if I said that it did, I'd be lying to be cool, because I want to look like I love Tupac and I want to impress people, and I'm just like, I would be lying. It doesn't do much for me, unfortunately.
So a few weeks ago we did Stereophonics and Mr. Writer. Now they're back. This one is called Have a Nice Day.
This is another one off the album Just Enough Education to Perform, which was actually inspired by a cab ride in San Francisco where a grumpy taxi driver pretty much just said to them in the taxi that he hates the place, it's full of tourists, and then just generally about humanity, everyone's the same, we just have different accents. And it inspired them to go and make this whole song, really, which is an interesting move.
Yeah.
Critically, it did get slated.
I was... Was I surprised to read that? I guess I was sort of surprised to read that because I've heard this song a lot. So clearly the criticism hasn't affected its radio play or just general play everywhere, because I do hear this a lot. Mm-hmm. We did Mr. Writer a little while ago. I thought they were a bunch of miserable bastards and they need to sort of channel that energy in a different way. It's safe to say my opinion hasn't changed, and that's a shame because I did think I liked this song.
Yeah.
And now I don't think I do.
No, and actually whenever I've looked into it, it's probably lowered its points for me. I do think it's got a great opener. I think, da, da, da. I think that's great.
That's a parasite of a brainworm. That is an absolute parasite.
Absolutely. I can't say lyrically that it connects with me. I do think that the story is interesting, but it's not gripping. You know, whenever we're doing the gripping thing.
Yeah.
But it is interesting as a concept.
Well,
and the reason why I say that is working in radio, right? I'm very big on, I should be able to give you a prop and you should be able to make something out of it as a creative. And I think as a bunch of creatives that they have gone, hold on a second, that taxi driver just told us a really, really mediocre story. I wonder if we can make a slightly above mediocre track out of it. And again, I think it would have played differently maybe if they weren't, you know, maybe signed to like major labels and all of that kind of crack, because then maybe they wouldn't have gone with this. But it's very much what I would say is like, it's not an album track. It's a single release, but it's further down the list into an album of what should be released. And I don't think they'd have played that hand the same if they weren't on a major, you know what I mean? Or if they had complete editorial control of what they were doing.
Yeah.
But the critics were grumpy.
You say it's turned a mediocre story into something else, you know, creatively. I still think it's quite a mediocre way of telling it as well. I don't think they've done too much to it really that really stood out. I've taken some lyrics out because I do think it... first of all, I had to read the lyrics because I didn't know any of them until this, because Kelly doesn't enunciate it properly. It's just a kind of slur and all the blurs. Like how Ariana Grande sings, it's like a one long word that kind of, you can tell it's changing syllables every now and again, but it's just one big long word.
Yeah. Okay.
San Francisco Bay, past Pier 39, early PM, can't remember what time. This is just him internal monologuing. Got the waiting cab, stopped at the red light. Address unsure of, but it turned out just right. Address unsure of, but it just turned out right. I just think that is... That needs more rewriting. That doesn't fucking songwriters, man. You've got stupid heads.
Or if you're 17 doing your A levels, that's deep, man.
This is 17 year old deep. But anyone who actually likes music would just be like, what, Kelly? It's just dripping in sarcasm and scorn for me, which is fine. But this is the second track in a row they've done that with. I just think it's making me sad because I always thought I liked Stereophonics as a band, and when they've performed in Newcastle, I've gone, I could have quite fancied seeing them, and now I'm realizing it might just be Dakota that I like, and that's coming up in like what, 4 years time.
Oh yeah,
I'm quite upset that we're gonna get Dakota. I'm not gonna like Dakota. That's what's scaring me.
Yeah,
I hope I still like Dakota, because that could be like a really sad day if it turns out I don't.
Are they a hooks band?
Yeah,
because Dakota obviously is built around a big hook.
Yeah,
immediately. I have seen them live. Very good.
Okay,
and I think Stereophonics, a lot of it is based around the tone of his vocal. You know, he sounds like he's smoked the perfect number of fags to give him a really unique voice and no more, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it works, considering everybody's shocked whenever they go, he's Welsh? You know, when you hear him speak in real life, it's dead confusing. So, but yeah, I get it. I still do like Mr. Writer better. And I think the critics we're uber critical, but I'm always looking for the positive in it. So I still think that like what they've done is take a situation and made it a more interesting tale of that situation. So there's still points there for me for that.
Yeah.
Is it an episode winner for me? Nowhere near it.
Interesting creative exercise, not an enjoyable song. Sorry, guys. Right, this should be interesting. We've already had a voice note, by the way, for this one, which we'll get to as part of this.
Oh.
Don't normally do that, but we're going to do it this week because there's some points that are worth referencing.
Mm-hmm.
This is the follow-up to Rollin', which was a big number one for Limp Bizkit. The track is called My Way. This time I'ma let it all go now. This time I'ma stand up and shout. I'ma do things my way. It's my way. My way or the highway. This time I'ma let it all go now. This time I'ma stand up.
This is the fourth single from Chocolate Starfish and the Hot Dog Flavoured Water, which Liam and I have no understanding of what that could potentially be.
Nope.
But yeah, so we've got Limp Bizkit back on the charts. So I'm loving the guitar and the effects in this in the first 10 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Big for me. I haven't put it down as an intro juice, but I just do love the effects and the process that Limp Bizkit have in a lot of their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm definitely more connected to the chorus than any of the verses at this point.
Yeah. What was funny for me was that I saw this on the list, you know, for weeks and weeks now. I've kind of scrolled past it when I've been like forward planning, and I've kept going Limp Bizkit My Way, and in my head I've always heard the Sex Pistols My Way, which was obviously their cover of Frank Sinatra, which sounds like this. And then literally, as I was going to click on the YouTube link to watch the video, I went, oh, I know it now. Like before it even came on, I clicked it and I thought, oh, it's that one, My Way or the Highway. For the longest time, I thought that they'd done a cover of the Sex Pistols cover of Frank Sinatra, which is kind of, I don't know if I'm sad that it isn't that. I certainly don't dislike this though, but I think nothing's going to compare to that Sex Pistols track, even if Johnny Rotten is now the worst.
Yeah, I do. So I've gone on a weird journey with this one because I think that I've actually gone down the same spiral that you might have just done with Stereophonics for Limp Bizkit. I held them in such high regard until we did this podcast, and then I've looked at their release discography of what we've still got to come from them, and we're very much on a downward spiral, unfortunately. And I loved Limp Bizkit, and I love their general sound, and I love their instrumentation. So I've put on this guitar, yes, effects, yes, drums, yes, lyrically and melody, not enough. So the My Way or the Highway is like the best bit of it. That's like a very, very, very small piece for me. But I actually prefer their next single, Boiler, that we're probably going to get. But I do think it was worth a single release. Definitely a number four off the album release.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I don't feel like the chorus in this, for me, gets where it needs to be a brilliant chorus. I think the actual chorus feels like a pre-chorus, and it's just missing a whole chorus. There's something, it just doesn't ramp up to where I need that to be. I'm a bit devastated because I was convinced before I listened to this and did the analysis on it that this was an absolute banger, and it's not as good as I thought.
Okay, let's hear from someone who does think it's a banger. This is Jonathan Foy, who got in touch this week.
Hey guys, Jonathan here. Just wanted to say, huge fan of the podcast. I've been listening since about March, and it's been a highlight for me every Friday when I wake up. Seeing as you guys are going to be covering My Way by Limp Bizkit, I don't know how you guys feel about it, but me personally, I love this song. I thought it was a great follow-up to Rollin'. The guitar at the start, the whole check out my melody, and the line, you think you're special, and honestly, lyrically, I'd say it's more serious than Rollin'. So one of the main reasons I love this song is that it was the theme for that year's WrestleMania, WrestleMania 17 or X7, as it was better known. It played during the build-up video for Stone Cold versus The Rock, which was amazing, and that match is, like, so good as well. And this song just showed that Limp Bizkit and early 2000s WWF just went hand in hand. Love the podcast, and looking forward to many more nostalgic journeys. Take care, guys.
Thanks, Jonathan. Good follow-up to Roland. More serious than Roland, which I've kind of got in my notes too. I think it's more straightforward and less objectionable than Roland. I think there's things you can object to Roland with, including the, all right, keep on rolling, baby.
Oh, yeah.
And Fred screaming the chorus. This one, I think the most polarizing bit, because it's so straightforward for me, when you, if you have to pick something out that you're kind of on the fence about or maybe don't like, it's actually Fred Durst's voice. In previous Limp Bizkit tracks, he hasn't really been a problem for me because there's been other problems that have kind of wrestled with each other. For me, in this one, it is just Fred and how kind of he comes across. It's a shame.
So is Historical Cheese disguising something for you?
Yeah.
From Fred, and actually now he's on full expose in this one.
Yeah, potentially, yeah.
Is that... could that be what it is for me? Could that be... So, video-wise and all of that kind of crack in this, and it is a Limp Bizkit thing, I never really got their sense of humour, so I don't connect with the... yeah, the keep on rolling. Like, all of that stuff, I don't need that. I want the music. I want the pure professional side of these tracks because I really like them, and I think they're a great entry-level band to get you to go harder and darker, you know, down this, like, you know, new rock bloody new noise kind of thing. But it didn't tick me, but I do, so that the what we're saying, you know, yeah, it is a bit more of a smarter track than Roland, but I do think that it is a little bit more boring, which is devastating, and I'm really sorry because I really do want to like it, even based on that voice memo. I think the best thing going for it is WWE, and I love that there's those attachments and stuff to it.
Yeah.
Because I actually tried Googling them, and then it ended up going down this like weird spiral of, wow, there's so much Limp Bizkit stuff to watch for wrestling.
Yeah.
And I don't follow wrestling, and I've always kind of, I did when I was a kid, like Jake the Snake and all of that kind of crack was like my era for a very small period of time. But I can totally get how, if you're into wrestling, this is absolutely a moment. It's the same with Planet Funk Chase a Song for the Darts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The whole darts is all about that hook of a song, really, these days, you know. Mm-hmm. But I'm pretty gutted that I've lost my little lamp for Limp Bizkit because of this track now.
Who thought would go from Planet Funk to Limp Bizkit?
Sorry.
I love this podcast, it's great. Okay, this is a new week. It's the 24th of June 2001. We're getting very close to the summer holidays, but we're not there yet. Still got a few more weeks of, I suppose we'll still have a few more weeks of learning, and then we'll get have like Toy Day and watch Shrek on DVD and stuff, or VHS. That's all still to come. Looking forward to that. The album chart this week was interesting. We had some new entries. Faithless came in at number 4 with Outrospective. In at number 2, you had D12 and Devil's Night.
Wow.
Number 1 was the same as last week, Travis, the Invisible Band. So at least 2 weeks number 1.
Oh, yeah.
We'll see if they continue that journey next week. In at number 3 is someone we haven't mentioned on the podcast yet because they didn't qualify by one place.
Oh, no.
I'm talking about Muse. Their album Origin was in number 3. This is their second album. We don't get to see Muse on our podcast until 2003 when Time Is Running Out comes into the mix and does get top 10. The track that didn't get in back in March was Plug-In Baby. Number 11, the great track, and I thought we'd just give a little sample here because it deserves to be fitting in somewhere, and I felt bad that we didn't get to sneak it in. It's a shame.
Muse is such a soundtrack to my university days, to be fair.
Yeah. I think that early Muse stuff's really good. I think some will argue they've lost their way over the years, but for a band that's been around for 20 years to still be notable and still be having number one albums and having top 10 albums and top 10 singles, sold out gigs at big stadiums, Muse have done all right, haven't they? They've done all right.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm, absolutely. My mate Gary used to be obsessed, and he was renowned at university for having a very, very large Land Rover. Mm. So he didn't own a Land Rover. Can you tell what the code was? But yeah, he had people coming and going. Mm. Well, people literally coming and going. but yeah, Muse was often the soundtrack to those debacles.
Mm. Interesting. And on Faceless, they released a new album just 3 weeks ago. It's called All Blessed, and it's the passing of the baton, as they say, because it's the first one that doesn't feature Maxi Jazz on the vocals. He's not on the album at all.
No!
We'll have to take a listen and see what we think of that, because surely what makes Faceless brilliant is how Maxi Jazz's vocals tie all together.
Yeah, it just like it accentuates the trance elements of it. Oh, I'm intrigued now. Mm. You've got me either. I think I'm going and listening furiously. I'm going to be a hard convert just simply from that basic fact.
Oof, right. Well, we'll try and give some thoughts on an upcoming TNNX. Singles-wise this week, Shaggy was knocked off, thank God, by Christina Aguilera, Lil Kim, Maya and Pink. That's right, all on the same track, and you know what one it is. It's Lady Marmalade.
This was a cover of the LaBelle track of the same name from back in 1974, also covered by the All Saints in 98. Will we do some listening to some originals and oldies?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do LaBelle from 74. And then this is the All Saints version from 1998, which I actually think was the first version of it that I actually knew. For the Moulin Rouge soundtrack. Interesting, yes. Interesting. Who'd have thought in 2001 we'd see all of these people brought together in one track? Shocking stuff when you're 17 years old.
Yeah, it's quite amazing. It's quite amazing that this thing comes together. I like that Maya is put up front. She kind of gets the first bit to do it. They all get like a section. Mm-hmm. It's one of those tracks where they all get a moment of just them doing their thing. I guess it all builds towards Christina. It's all that big crescendo waiting for Christina to come and just rip the door off, yeah. Which she does with her massive voice. Do you think Bob Crewe and Kenny Nolan, who wrote this in the 70s, would ever think that it would take on a life like this? Because it's just transformed so much from that 70s hit, which LaBelle have admitted that they didn't even know what it meant,
yeah,
when they were singing it. They didn't even know it was about a prostitute. Now it's this big burlesque performance for a film soundtrack with four of the biggest names in music all doing it justice in their own way. It's kind of amazing how it's changed.
It is amazing how it's changed, and it's actually like for two men to have written this, I don't know what their point was whenever they did it, but it's become a real big female empowerment track, you know, a drag empowerment track, a trans empowerment track. Mm-hmm. It's created a life for so many different communities and just helped people in ways that you could never really have realized. I think most of that actually does stem from this version as opposed to the Patti LaBelle. But
yes.
I think what it did, I think, you know, if you didn't look close enough to know that it was about sex workers in New Orleans, I think maybe the perception and the assumption people made was it was just being women confident enough to say, do you want to go to bed with me? Not realizing it was about like actual sex trade. But it did give people a green light, girls a green light to be confident and, you know, to be like, you know what, I would like to have some sex, please. And I'm going to ask you because I'm a girl and I can do what the fuck I want. Stop judging me because I'm inviting the man into my bedroom. So I think it opened loads of different doors which weren't necessarily planned when they sat down and put pen to paper back in the 70s.
Yeah.
But this version really paved the way for people working with each other, because we all thought it was competition when we were younger, and to see them all together was like, this makes no sense.
Mm.
And then now, if you look at the charts, it's just all collaborations. It is so difficult for people to have a long-running number one single completely by yourself, written by yourself, produced by yourself, and to do it, you know.
Yeah.
It just made things weird, like monumentally weird in a great way.
Yeah. I love that it's performed by four women. It's also produced by Missy Elliott.
Uh-huh.
That's a really, really good part for it for me as well. You've said that it wasn't a competition. From what I've read, it sounds like on set and as part of recording it and putting it together, it actually was quite tense because there was a Christina and Pink battle ensuing for who got the most prominence in the track. It's alleged they butted heads over whose voice would get featured most, and Lil' Kim has confirmed this. She said it was tense on set. In 2017, Pink and Christina have both tweeted that they'd made up.
Okay.
So there was a real conflict there, which is fair enough because I guess they're both quite fledgling new names on the scene, but they've already kind of established themselves quite quickly as ones to watch.
Yeah.
You'd say Christina's probably more cemented than Pink at this point because Pink is still yet to escape the shackles of her R&B-ness, which we're not too fond of.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the track, as it's come out, it's worked out just fine. You wouldn't tell that there was any you know, animosity. It's just a really great track that's come out as you'd hope. And the phrase, voulez-vous coucher avec moi ce soir, that's probably the only French some people will remember, having done GCSE. I mean, for me, as someone who studied GCSE French, I remember nada. But that phrase, I do. Mm-hmm. I don't say it much, but I do remember it.
That's all I know in French.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all I can kind of do. I think my languages all kind of stem from friends. You know, whenever the air host guy who's closing the gate for Rachel speaks in English in a French accent and she's like, oh my God, I didn't think I was going to remember any of my French I learned in high school, but I understood every word you said. And he's spoken in English. That's kind of me. But I didn't think that I thought it was, would you go to bed with me, please? As opposed to, would you like to sleep with me tonight?
That sounds so desperate.
Yeah, and then I thought, that would sound so funny in, like, your accent. Would you go to bed with us, please? You know what I mean? I'd be so good at a night out. But yeah, I think this is naughty.
Mm, oh,
like,
yeah.
I think we've got a naughty word here, like an actual naughty word. Christina, I've written down, what the fuck? We so far, I think, was it last week we discussed, in 2001, Lisa Scott Lee was frisky because there was shoulder and there was belly. You know what I mean? This changed everything in the music video.
Mm.
This is exactly what we needed to happen, where female empowerment was just like smashed through. You can wear what you want. The skin's yours. Put whatever skin on camera that you want. You know, just express pure like femininity. Is that a word, femininity?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Express your femininity, do your thing, and you know, show yourself off. It was circus, it was cabaret, it was chic, it was sass, it was just so much. This was actually like much more of a big change in track than I really remembered. I didn't get how important it was.
Mm.
But now in my 30s looking back, Jesus, that changed everything.
Before we move on to Faith Hill, we did say there'd be an announcement at some point. It relates to this track because this week we spoke to drag queen Davina DeCampo. You may have seen her on RuPaul's Drag Race UK last year.
Mm-hmm.
You may know her from her music. You may know her from the BBC show All Together Now. You may know her for just being an amazing drag queen, which she is and has been for quite a long time now. She's on the podcast next week. We spoke to her all things noughties because that was the decade that she became Davina DeCampo. It was quite, as we learned from chatting to her, quite a influential decade in her life.
Yeah.
So much happened, so much that made her who she is now happened in that decade. We're going to talk about all of it and you're going to hear it on the 23rd of November. So look forward to that. Here's a little taster of her talking about one of her favourite tracks of the decade, which is Lady Marmalade. What are the chances?
It was outrageous. You know, it was genuinely outrageous. The vocals were amazing. The way that everybody looked was sensational. The camera in the video. Oh, when Christina Aguilera is finally sat in front of that mirror going, oh, yeah, boo, with the powder puff and everything. I mean, the whole thing was just opulent, camp, sexy, sassy. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. And really, really good music.
Yeah.
Like genuinely really good. And that's, you know, that for me was like the track of the decade.
Wow.
Whenever anybody asks me about, you know, what was your pivotal track? That's it. I was obsessed.
What a character. How much fun.
Yes.
Having her actually on the podcast.
Yeah.
Such a like a person that lights up a room. Mm. You know, just the minute she opens her gob, things are just happy, things are fun. And we've just laughed. We've laughed a lot through that, which is really good.
Okay, final track this week. We mentioned Pearl Harbor last week because it came out in cinemas. This is the theme from it. It's from Faith Hill and it's called There You'll Be.
This one before we'd started.
No.
Had you recognised
it?
No. This, I have a huge soft spot for this one.
Oh, okay.
This was, and I don't know if it still is, but whenever I was a teenager, you know, when you kind of start getting to go to weddings, this was a massive first dance in Northern Ireland.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Many people that I know have had this as their first dance. And I think this actually officially could be the song that I've slow danced probably the most to in my life, you know.
Oh.
Maybe that or Lone Star Amazed, you know, because whenever you go to a wedding, the bride and groom dance,
yeah,
and then they invite in the wedding party, and then people from the get to go and join on the floor, and you dance to. So that might actually be one of the most slow danced songs in my life, really, really, which is quite written by Diane Warren,
yes,
whose name has popped up a lot through this podcast, and refused by Celine of Dion, who didn't want another ballad for her album.
That's interesting. I think if you think about it as a film song, geographically, chronologically rather, it sits next to Armageddon, Aerosmith, Don't Want to Miss a Thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I guess Titanic, Celine, My Heart Will Go On. This one is far less dramatic than those, because those ones are very, very dramatic songs. I'd never heard this before. I couldn't believe I'd never heard this really heard of Faith Hill or ever. And I've since learned that she's one of the most successful country music artists of all time.
Yeah.
Considering the record she's had in terms of awards she's won and records that she's sold, I guess she'd be up there with the most successful artist full stop of all time, let alone just in that genre. She's got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. She has sold 40 million records. She's got this amazing big film soundtrack song that she's been given the chance to do. Yeah, it's stirring. The word I've got is stirring. I think you want a track that's about a really emotional part of history where people died and, you know, tragedy happened. You want it to be stirring. And it is. I think if I have one complaint, it is that it's possibly a bit dated.
Okay.
I think for 2001, it sounds more like a 90s track to me. Not that it's a real problem.
No.
It's just that I don't think it fits in with the music that's around now, and as such probably won't be a contender for me, or you know.
Yeah,
it's also too slow for me, but that's just my advice, you know.
I did almost cry heading towards the chorus listening to it, because it really does kind of grab you. I've got that it's very, very grand, it's really, really classy,
yes
vocally flawless, lyrically it's beautiful, and it just sits in a really nice place with me. Again, I'm still in the same camp as you, whereas it isn't going to be a contender for me this week. But I do think, so to kind of position, this is probably something along the lines of an inspiration for somebody like Miley Cyrus. You know, Faith Hill, her position in society was that, what do you call Calvin Harris's ex-girlfriend, really famous, and I can't remember her name for some stupid reason.
Taylor Swift.
So Faith Hill will have been like mama to, you know, a country music Taylor Swift that we had all of those years ago. So massive deal. I love the way that you've described her, because obviously I feel like you're describing her to England, because I come from Northern Ireland, which is massive in country music. And like Garth Brooks is still like the biggest dude in the world there.
Yeah.
I feel like it's so strange because I forget the disconnect between the two countries sometimes. And actually, we do need to explain who Faith Hill is to people in England, even though she had number three because nothing else hit it. And you know, nobody over here line dances. I don't know what your problems are, like why is there no line dancing classes, but but a Faith Hill, this could have been the first dance at my sister's, could it have been at my sister's wedding. I'm merging about three different weddings together, but I always know that this was the track for so many people, because it was just like a great first dance.
What was your first dance song?
You Got the Love.
Oh,
sometimes I feel like throw my hands up in the
Candy Stanton, or Florence
my arse, Candy Stanton. And I remember being actually really annoyed, because we got married in the Lake District, and we were driving to the Lake District, and we were like, we love this song, it's never been destroyed by somebody. And we drove to the Lake District in 2009, and I got a fucking play on the radio from Florence and the Machine and her harping away. So I've got a few people who I totally get as to why they're successful, but there's notes that they hit that hurt my head.
Yes.
And Jessie J hurts my head.
Yeah.
While I respect her and can see how to other people it's great, but I can't listen. And Florence, and me and my wife love Florence and the Machine, but I really struggle with some of the notes. And I do think the notes, you can hear it. If you know the bits I'm talking about, where she goes, you know, when she does that bit in the song, that hurts my eardrums. And it's like she set a dog off in my house whenever she sings that. And I was devastated on the way to my wedding, hearing that for the first time, really just broken and devastated.
So when you and your wife renew your vows at some point, it's safe to say she isn't invited. She's not performing.
No, and our first dance end is going to be "Have You Got Back." Like big
Let's talk about the tracks we've done today then. We've got six to choose from. We need to pick a winner. Scott, you're going to go first, as you always do. I've not decided yet either, so take your time.
Right. Oh, isn't it so funny that I'm flicking past Limp Bizkit and I made an assumption that that would be in my pot and I'm a bit devastated. Actually, are we on an easy one to... We're in a tough situation today. Are we in a top? Right, no, hold on a second. I'm in an easy situation today. Right, I've got one in my pot and one winner. The one that is my runner-up.
I think we're
going
to go for the same, to be fair.
Do you think?
Yeah.
My runner-up is going to be, and I love this, and I think what we've got is we've got like a big gap between this and what would be number three. I don't even know what would be number three. Mystique, no. All I Want is my runner-up.
Okay.
And Christina, Lil' Kim, Maya and Pink, Lady Marmalade as my episode winner this week.
Okay.
Is there any point asking you the question?
There is a point asking, yeah.
Okay, give me your logic. So, Liam, what's in your contender's pot and what's your episode winner?
I've also got two. However, my number two is going to be Christina, Lil Kim, Maya and Pink.
No.
Lady Marmalade. And my number one is going to be Mystique, All I Want. I flipped it around.
Oh, I did not expect that. And do you know what it is?
Did you not?
No. And I think, yeah, I think maybe I've given... I think the amount of passion I put behind Mystique, and maybe I haven't done Lady Marmalade justice with the way that I've described it. Then if I've chosen it as a pot and you maybe assumed we were going the same way, and then I assumed you were going the same way based on what you'd said.
Well, no.
Wow.
No, not at all.
Oh. We're back in this position where actually I love that I've not chosen Mystique, but you've given it the nod. You know what I mean? When we get into that camp.
Yeah.
I love that that's happened. And I think I could have easily chosen Mystique, but I need to think about... Well, what puts up the biggest challenge for J-Lo?
I think this one potentially does put a challenge up because the measure is social impact, and I think this one has that.
Mm-hmm.
And we've spoken about the impact it had in terms of positivity for, you know, communities that hadn't had that representation before.
Yep.
Did J-Lo really do that for the trans community, the gay community? Lady Marmalade did. Is that going to be what tips it for you? Is it going to stay the same? I think there's one thing for it, Scott. Here's your drone.
I know I said when I was cleaning the bottle teats at the sink that I was maybe due for a Jennifer Lopez change. I was like, no, you need to stick with it.
Before we go on, I love that you're cleaning bottle teats and thinking about J-Lo.
Yeah,
filthy perv.
Me, if only she had eight teats, she'd be like the cow of the block.
I wish I hadn't interjected now.
No, me too. I think that I've actually, the things and the bits that I've said about Lady Marmalade actually have emphasised the massive social impact for this. I'm kind of a bit like, oh, should it win? Because there's so many of them all together. I don't care about that. And I know fine right if I was to go down that alleyway, then I would be doing that whole controversial thing again where I go, it's not pop tracks or it's not fair, it's no social impact. The impact of this track is massive for people that are into drag, for people who are transgender, for people who just want to wear what they want, for women who need empowerment, for people that just love a bit of cabaret. You know, this is just an all-encompassing track that just lets people be free, and I'm all about that freedom. My new series winner is Lady Marmalade.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness! Mm-hmm. I didn't think the day would ever come.
No, I know.
And oh wow!
I didn't actually expect that until we started talking about it, and then you really think about these things. Mm-hmm. But yeah, shit. How? Oh shit. Okay, because there's things that I could foresee coming that was like, oh, that'll knock J-Lo off. And then I never thought about this one being a knocker offer because I didn't really, I just think, you know, when you land on the spreadsheet, mm-hmm. I hadn't really seen it coming.
Yeah, yeah.
But wow, change. Wow, jiggers.
That's very exciting.
Uh-huh.
If you're going to pick your winner based on how many people are on the track, you'd end up with Blazing Squad as your winner at the end.
I'll see you at the crossroads, mate. But,
oh, yeah.
So I think you've got a really difficult one yours isn't necessarily a social impact, female empowerment. Well, there is an element of that, I suppose.
I think
Your political side of it is a bit different to what my political side of it is. So,
yes.
Liam, Blue All Rise versus Mystique All I Want. Here's your drone.
Okay, it's safe to say, while we're talking about social impact, that Mystique had far more of it than Blue.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Blue, you didn't look at them and go, wow, they're so brave. They're doing something so different. Whereas Mystique, I was watching a video of Alicia Dixon on Russell Howard's programme where she was talking about their experience as an all-black girl band and the hurdles that they faced, being told by record execs that they wouldn't sell records because they were, you know, three black women.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the impact of Mystique and also the impact that they had on music as a garage girl band totally brought something new to the table. You've got Alicia rapping, which is still amazing. Where does it stack against Blue? This actually really is a tricky one. I hadn't considered it too much. Last week I came out and said that Blue is in a different sport,
yeah.
And I still stand by that. The social impact of Mystique is greater. I like All Rise more as a track, and that's what I'm going to go with. And I actually also like Why better as a track that Mystique brought out last time. I know that was a remix,
mm-hmm.
but I feel like I like that a smidge more.
Oh.
All I Want is still a banger,
mm-hmm.
but I'm sticking with Blue, All Rise. Sorry, girls. Oh, man.
I thought, based on the way that you talked there about, I kind of thought your counter argument for Blue was because of the construction of that song and being like a courtroom drama, it was art, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I still thought there's nothing you're going to be able to say about Blue that can beat Mystique right now. And I think, yeah, maybe I'm just too uptight. You know what it is? Maybe I'm just way too uptight. And I'm not actively trying to not pick things that I love. I'm just trying to be fair.
Yeah,
and
that's fair.
But I think what you're doing is you're being true to yourself. So I get why you're in your camp. Well,
I think I would wonder if I'd had a bump on the head if I dropped Blue this soon.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not being funny. Mystique is brilliant, but Blue is, it's special.
And
it's different.
I will say about Mystique why, even though I've said that this one is better than Y. Y has completely jumped up since we've done the episode with Y in it. I never skip it on Spotify. I jump around to it. I sing to it. I do everything. And I think I probably didn't do it enough justice. I still don't think it would have won my episode that week. But I think that it's way much more of a jam than what I'd said about it at the time. And even though we were really positive about it, I still think it's better. Better, better, better.
So we always hand it over to you now at this point and say, what was your favourite? Do let us know on our socials. We do our listeners' choice poll, which is the four tracks of the week that we think are the most relevant and most worthy of being in competition to go against each other. Last week's was very competitive. We had Tabby rooting for Steps. We had Tamsin rooting for Basement Jacks. Kevin Slight said he can't go wrong with Travis, Steps and Basement Jacks. All right, pick one. Greedy. And Naomi Makayeva of Limavady fame, she says, she asked if Scott would mind if that do you want to read this, because it makes more sense that you read it, because I don't know what it means.
Right, I'll do it in my Limavady accent as well. Naomi McIver of Limavady asked if Scott would mind that police van from the Week on One video outside Jensen's. So she's asking, do I remember that style of police van outside of Jensen's nightclub outside of the Gortine? So mind means remember whenever we speak in culture.
Right, okay.
So yeah, no, I kind of, well, I'm questioned now. One, does Naomi know me? And two, did I get arrested? Three, did she witness it if I did? You know what I mean? Did I get arrested? My Jensen's experience outside in the car park was very much one night sleeping. They built a flower bed. It had a massive car park and cars used to like fly around it. So what they did is they built two massive flower beds where you could drive through a gap, so people had to go slow through the car park. But I remember they built these big flower beds but hadn't put any plants in them yet, and then I slept in the flower bed one night because I was too drunk and didn't want to go home or down the town for a pizza. So that's my car park. I don't think the police were involved in that. So Naomi, if you know anything differently, PM me, don't publicise.
Yes.
That'd be great.
Yes, yes, please. I'd like to continue this podcast with Scott, you know, in his bedroom and not in incarceration. I'm not sure that would really
Don't
work.
Get me wrong. If the police were involved, there was a 95% chance in Limavady that it was something to do with my brother Lee. But, you know, I was never there.
Deary me. Anyway, back to the poll. Steps were ahead for most of the week, but with less than an hour to go, because I messaged you, Scott, saying, oh my God, it's a draw. And you were like, no, there's an hour left. And there was an hour left. Basement Jacks got one more vote in that hour and won. They led for the first time in that last few minutes of the poll, which is quite amazing. So they chose what I chose. Basement Jacks, Romeo, was the winner last week. Follow us on Twitter. We'll do another one on Saturday. Naughty00pod on Twitter. TNNpod on Facebook and Instagram. And Naughty00pod or at gmail.com for your emails and voice notes.
Next time, we've got a busy week with the returns for Usher, Gorillaz and Wheatus, plus the first and only podcast appearance for Roger Sanchez and OPM.
And you might not believe it from how we spoke about them when we did. But Hearsay did have a follow-up hit to Pure and Simple, and it was actually a number one. We've got a second Hearsay number one next week. Who would have thought?